The following is inspired by actual events and is meant for a mature audience. Your hosts are lifelong horror fans.
Listener discretion is advised.
What you are about to see.
It's called the Monster Club.
Welcome to the Monster Club, an honest look at horror movies from lifelong horror fans. Fair warning, you may not have seen this movie. We have spoilers, ho! I am Jethel.
I'm Talk.
And we just got done watching the 2015 horror, It Follows.
Creepiest flick ever made, I think.
Well, I wouldn't say ever made, but it was sufficiently creepy.
I love the film so much. It's a piece of art on celluloid. It really is.
Okay, so let's take a look at It Follows. According to Internet Movie Database, It follows a young woman who is followed by an unknown supernatural force after getting involved with a sexual encounter. And that's all we have to say about it. Good night, folks.
Good night.
Okay, let's talk about It Follows.
First thing, what would be your alternative title for It Follows? Can you think of one off the top of your head? I don't know.
What do you got?
If I were to retitle the movie, I would call it STD. Sexually Transmitted Demon.
That works.
Because when we were watching it, that's what we pretty much agreed would be the only thing you would call this thing as a demon.
Yeah.
Because it is a supernatural entity beyond human understanding.
It just wants to be loved.
Now, really big time with the spoilers thing. If you have not seen this movie, just turn off the podcast and watch it. Do not listen to us talk about this movie if you have not seen this movie yet.
It is
one of those movies where you really need to watch it to appreciate everything, you know, we're going to say about it. And if you listen to us beforehand, it's going to kind of ruin the movie for you. So,
right. So we just got done watching the movie together.
Mm-hmm.
From halfway across the country. Isn't the internet wonderful?
Yes.
Okay, so we just got done watching this, and we agree that this movie is sufficiently creepy.
Mm. I would say beyond sufficiently. I would say it's extraordinarily creepy. Nightmarish,
if you would, yes.
Yes.
Let's talk about the curse itself. First off, it is sexually transmitted.
Yep. If you do the dirty deed with somebody who the creature is currently slowly, one step at a time, chasing, because it doesn't run, it walks after you at a very slow pace.
Michael Myers could outrun this thing.
Yeah. It is persistent, though, and it never rests, it never sleeps, it just keeps on going. So it doesn't matter if you have 40 miles between you or four, it'll keep on going until it gets to you eventually. But, once you do the dirty deed with somebody that it's following, it starts to follow you. And when it gets you, if it gets you, I should say when it gets you, because it's going to get you sooner or later.
Eventually.
Then it goes after the person that gave you the curse.
Unless you just outlast it. It's entirely possible to outlast this thing. It would be a lot of work involved. But you could outlast the curse.
So you're saying that eventually you would die of old age before it could get to you. Wow. Yeah, you'd have to be permanently on, like, cruise ships traveling across the world.
Right. Now that brings up a good point. What happens to this demon if you do manage to outlive it and everyone else down the chain is dead?
I think that that's unlikely, though. As much as humans enjoy having sex, I find it very hard to believe that everyone that preceded you or is after you in the chain would not branch out and have sex with other people. So I'm sure the demon would have plenty of people to go after.
That of course, is assuming, and we don't know for sure,
mm-hmm.
that you can spread it to more than one person.
Well, that sounds like an excellent defense strategy, doesn't it? Just have sex with multiple partners and just keep doing that until, you know, faster than it can go through them.
It's the only horror movie in history that encourages you to have sex.
Right, because in all other horror movies, the guy and the girlfriend in their tent in the middle of the woods, you know.
You have sex, you're dead.
Yeah, and then Jason comes after them with a machete, slicing open the tent and then slicing them open. So, and this sex is both the thing that brings about the curse on you, and also it's the defense mechanism. It's it's the way to provide, you know, what's the word I'm thinking of? Not a distraction, but the same thing.
It makes you evade the inevitable.
Yeah.
So basically, this movie is telling you if you want to survive this thing, you've got to become a whore.
Pretty much. Sexually promiscuous.
Even in one scene, she swims out to a boat. They don't show anything, but the assumption is that she just fucked like three guys on a boat.
Yeah, because she's at the end of her rope and she realizes, you know, well, I've been asleep all night, you know, on the hood of my car out in the open, which was really stupid, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she was hoping it would just catch up with her while she was asleep and she wouldn't even know.
That would probably be the preferred method of dying to this thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Just not knowing it. Just get it the fuck over with.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be someone, of course, you know, we got talking about outlasting it. I mean, after a number of years, wouldn't you just want to just give the fuck up?
Yep. I don't even think I would allow it to catch up with me. I think I'd just find a way to end it myself.
What happens if you dropped it down a well? We don't know. There's a lot of questions that go unanswered, and I think that's a good thing because we can talk about theories. Like I brought up when we first started watching, you know, what happens if you get on a boat and you're just on a cruise?
I know it's tempting to think that the thing just kind of walks along the bottom of the surface under the body of water or maybe waits on the shore.
But even if it swims, how would it get on the boat?
Yeah.
You're on a big luxury cruise liner. The only thing you need to worry about is staying ahead of it when you make port to pick up supplies.
I think it would just, you know, find something dangling off the side of the boat, a rope or something, and climb its way on.
No, that's when you, as the studious person you are, make sure there's nothing dangling off that side of the boat.
Right. I mean,
excuse me, Captain,
I guess.
Can we get rid of that rope down there, please?
Well, it's the lifeboat. You know, it's hanging down. I don't know. It's a shape-shifting demon. I'm just going to call it a demon. It's a shape-shifting demon, so you never know. It could assume other shapes with incredibly long arms. I mean, it did assume the shape of a human with very unlikely dimensions. The actor is 7 feet 7 inches tall, you told me.
Yep.
So, you know.
It's possible. Can it turn into an animal?
We don't know. That's an interesting idea. I would assume that it would have no restrictions on its shape-shifting abilities. The only reason it changes into the few forms it does is camouflage, so you don't see it coming.
But I would think if it could transform into an animal, it would have during the course of the movie. I mean, it would be a lot more efficient to be a bird.
Yeah, but how does a bird go at walk speed, though? That's a kind of defining feature of this demon, is that it approaches – I mean, humans can run. But it chooses to walk.
Can you imagine that? Just being on a playground somewhere and looking, is that pigeon walking slowly toward us?
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, they would walk, wouldn't they? If it assumed the form, it wouldn't fly at all.
That's right.
It would just slowly walk with its little bird legs over to you and then start to peck your toes to death. I like that this film is completely... You know, in-camera effects, there are no... Yeah, well, okay, in the very end of the film, there are some effects that have to do with the bullet shots and the blood and everything.
Right.
But other than that, they don't show any fancy CGI morphing. You know, it just changes shape off-screen, you know.
Right. Until the pool scene, there are really no special effects that I can recall.
Yeah, I mean, and if there are, then we're not meant to see them. They're just ordinary, you know, oh, let's fix this shot because it needs an extra building back there to,
right,
you know, something like that.
I don't think the crack whore is actually peeing herself.
I doubt that was CGI, though.
No, but at least that was a practical effect. But
yes, But yeah, it was done completely, you know, almost completely practical, except for the very end. And even right. that looked, you know, it definitely didn't look fake or anything. It just looked otherworldly, you know.
Believe it or not, this movie had a budget of $2 million.
Really?
I thought it would have been done for a lot less.
I think it shows in how much effort they put into the cinematography for the film. All the camera moves are very slow and gradual and deliberate, just like the Demon.
Mm-hmm.
And all the set dressing that went into it, all the research, the costuming, even the color balancing, everything just kind of looks super real. You know, all the green trees really popped. All the grass looked super lush. You
Again,
know?
Dreamlike.
Yeah, yeah. And an interesting feature of the film regarding the props is that this film really can't be nailed down to a specific time period. There's a girl in the beginning of the film with a flip cell phone. And for the rest of the film, we see almost no modern technology.
Right, except no computers at all.
No computers. All the TVs are old E-Rabbit CRT, with the turn dials, the clunk, clunk, mm-hmm. clunk, clunk, turn dials. And
most of the cars are full-size sedans.
Right.
From the 80s.
From the 60s, 70s, and 80s. The clothes kind of have a 60s, 70s feel to them, maybe early 80s. The boy across the street, he wears a denim acid wash jean jacket that's clearly from early 1990s, late 1980s. And the only bit of, you know, technology that's kind of like a, you know, an oddball thing, what do you call it when something's an anachronism, is this clamshell e-reader that the younger sister, or that the book nerd carries with her.
Yeah, it's completely out of place for the rest of the scene.
Yeah.
So what time period is this?
But of course, everything is out of place. All the things in the movie are pulled from, you know, some of the cars in the background are from today.
Right.
They're just modern cars that just happen to be in the background in certain neighborhoods and whatnot.
I wonder if they even made an effort to go around to the neighborhood. Hey, can you park your car in the garage for a minute?
No, I don't. I think they just figure, you know what? This is going to work. Because, like we were discussing when we were watching the film, when you have a nightmare, often, you know, you'll have a dream where you'll be in your house, the house you grew up in as a little kid, and you'll walk through a couple of doors and suddenly you'll be in a house that your family moved to years later.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow they've joined together, although they are years apart by, you know, years and miles apart in space and time. So you've got this disjointed, you know, feel of all these different items from different decades joined together in this one story and existing alongside each other. And you even have this e-reader that is completely, it's non-existent. Apparently it's from a decade that we haven't experienced yet. It looks like a little pink clamshell, what did we call that?
A compact.
A compact. Except that the place where the powder is and the place where the mirror is, it's kind of like a Nintendo 3DS,
yeah,
you know,
two
dual
screens,
and it looks like the screens off of a Kindle Paperwhite, and she's just scrolling through these interesting literary references and reading out loud to her friends, and using it as a flashlight at one point. So I really love that. I love that mishmash of time, you know, decade
chronologically ambiguous.
Yeah, it's chronologically ambiguous, and I think that really works for the feeling of a nightmare.
Yeah,
for the whole movie, it's a great vibe.
Now, I originally gave this movie a pretty poor review,
mm-hmm.
but after watching it with you at the same time and us talking about the different points as we were experiencing them, I am going to upgrade the star rating at Cinema Unrest.
Oh, good. What's it getting? It is sitting currently at 3 pitiful stars.
At 3 pitiful stars.
And personally, ladies and gentlemen, I would personally give this 5 stars.
No, I'm not giving it 5 stars. It's going to get 4. My rating system goes from 1 to 5 on a scale of rewatchability. as one being didn't meet any redeeming qualities, and number five meaning run over your own mother to see this movie. And I wouldn't run over my own mom to see this one. I'll give it a definite must see.
Well, you know, I don't think you'd run over your mom to watch any movie. It's just figurative. But on the scale of the worst movie to the best movie I've ever seen, this is a really close five. You know, I would give it like a 4.8. You know, it's like, just to give you an idea, ladies and gentlemen, on Rotten Tomatoes, popular review aggregator website for film, it holds a 96% approval rating. That is certified fresh on their website.
Okay, I put it at a 4.5 just now. Are you happy?
Yes, that makes me happy. Okay. Writer and director David Robert Mitchell conceived of the film based upon recurring dreams he had in his youth about being followed. Wow, that really came through. When we were watching the film just now, I remember mentioning that to you, that it really brought back that kind of vibe for me. So, Wow, well done. So It Follows debuted at the 2014 Cannes Film Festival, and it was purchased by the Weinstein Company's subsidiary, Radius TWC. So it wasn't developed in Hollywood. It was filmed on location in Detroit, Michigan.
Detroit, America's wasteland.
Yeah, and a perfectly fitting setting for this movie. The neighborhoods have this surreal, you know, once pretty nice but now kind of run down look to them. Mm-hmm. Most of the neighborhoods in the film, it's got kind of this suburbia gone to seed kind of vibe to it, which I love. And this demon doesn't approach looking monstrous. It just looks like people. Well, sometimes grotesque versions of people you would see on the streets. You know, sometimes it's someone you know. Sometimes it's somebody, you know. And apparently in the film, it's always somebody that we've seen, either in a picture or a character from somewhere else in the film.
Right.
So it's got a kind of built-in camouflage. And eventually, let's see, they kind of learn about it, and she freaks out the first time it approaches her and at her house, and her and her friends jump in the car and head off to the beach to get away from it.
And at this point, they don't believe her.
Yeah, they're kind of, well, we're not quite sure. She's just, you know, maybe
she's freaking out for some reason. We need to calm her down. Well, let's go to the beach, and we'll humor her for a little while.
From her friend's perspective, it's like she's probably the victim of sexual assault or rape, and she's just, you know, she's really freaking out over that, which would be perfectly understandable.
And repressing what actually happened, and something's following her. You know, she feels like something's following her. That's pretty much the friend's reaction. But soon enough, they learn it's real. This it has real, solid real. Mass.
Yeah, that scene on the beach. I love those scenes in the movies where you have somebody who is being hunted down by something. Nobody is sure quite what to make of their claims. They're not quite sure whether they're really telling the truth. And suddenly they are presented with clear, direct evidence that it is real. And I love those thrilling moments where everybody involved is suddenly like, oh, shit. This is real. This is actually happening. Oh my God! She was telling the truth. We're all fucked.
Mm-hmm.
And that scene on the beach where it suddenly grabs her hair and everyone can see what is happening. That is a really on the edge of your seat scene right there.
Grabs her hair. The younger guy hits it with a chair and it kicks him away.
Uh huh.
And you don't see the actual kick, but
yeah, it's invisible from our point of view. Because we're seeing it from her friend's kind of point of view, that there's nothing there, but they can see clearly something is attacking her.
Mm-hmm.
How does it get away from her exactly? Does she just kind of yank her hair out of its grasp and run off?
I think it let her go when it turned to kick the younger guy away.
Yeah, maybe. That makes sense. That's plausible. And they run off to hide in the shed where the gun is kept.
And here's where we learn that it can be stunned.
Mm-hmm.
So you shoot the thing, you can stun it. Shoot it in the head, you stun it for longer, apparently.
Yeah.
As we learn later in the pool scene. But
I don't think they actually hit it anywhere else except for its hand. I think its head and its hand.
No. From the barn or the garage, whatever the hell it is where they have the gun, she shot it in the neck.
Oh, in the neck. Okay.
Yeah,
well,
it stunned it. It fell down, but it got right back up. But yeah. In the pool scene, there's such a delay from that scene until they see it again. I'm assuming it's stunned for a longer period of time.
Yeah. Well, we don't know for sure that. Well, I guess we do, don't we? Because we didn't see that the thing following them along the sidewalk.
Right.
At first, and then suddenly he's there. It's there, so we have to assume.
It has mass. It can be stunned. Apparently not with chair shots. But yeah. with a gun, you shoot it in the head, it gets stunned. It can change on a whim.
Yeah.
To different size and shaped people, because it broke a hole in the door, and it was a normal-sized person. Couldn't get through that hole, so changed into a child.
Yeah, and not a cute child either.
Okay, so we'll assume it's the creepy peeping Tom from next door. Speaking of it transforming into the kid, as far as I'm concerned, it was uncharacteristic for it to start when it was going through the That's just, you know, it made no noises or anything like that in any other incarnation. I just don't see why it did that.
I think they must have tried it several different ways and decided that that was the scariest thing it could do at that moment.
I think it would have been
in the editing room.
I think it would have been better. A kid popped through the, you know, goes down through the hole and just, if it would have just stared at her for a second, I think that would have been creepier.
Mm.
Not with a.
I don't know. The hiss really got to me because at this point, you know, we've never seen it get angry. We've just seen it plodding along, determined.
So
but now it was pissed.
Maybe it was like you shot me in the neck.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm thinking.
All right.
That it was enraged, and that's why it did that.
Okay, so it changes shape. It can be stunned. It's very slow. It's just a regular walking speed.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't, from what I saw, I mean, not even average walking speed.
Yeah, it's really slow, kind of.
Just kind of strolling.
Retirement,
old person walking center, old in the person, mall kind of walk, you know?
Yeah, with their white sneakers and their Vita shorts or whatever, you know, just kind of trying to keep the blood flowing.
Okay, so how would you escape it? How would you escape it?
How would I escape it? Well, being a guy, I think I would have a lot of problems trying to find, you know, because, I mean, the girl, she had it easy.
It's like Jeff said when he was explaining everything to the group. It's
right.
Well, it should be easy for her. She's a girl.
Right.
And that's true. I'm sorry, but call me sexist, but that's pretty true.
Yeah, it's not a stereotype.
Yeah.
It's the world that we live in currently that girls definitely have it easier. Yeah, I don't think I could. I mean,
but I'm not talking about passing it on. How would you outlive it?
I don't think I would because, you know.
Could you get yourself committed? Padded room, locked up?
Eventually it would find a way in. Through a door opened for it by somebody who doesn't know it's there.
It would
walk in as soon as somebody entered the hospital.
I still say best way to outlive this thing is a cruise ship.
Maybe.
As long as you're moving fast enough to keep ahead of it so you have time to make the port of call and restock the supplies and stuff.
You run into the problem of the lack of funds, though. You know, pretty soon you're going to run out of money and they're going to kick you off. And there's nothing you can do about that, you know.
Because you can't really say private island because, you know, whether it swims or whether it walks across the ocean, the bottom of the ocean, it's eventually going to find you.
Yeah. Even if it has to, I mean, you got to get supplies somehow. And so it'll just go aboard a ship that is coming to your island to give you supplies. And then, you know,
So I think it's not hiding from it, it's trapping it. Drop it into a ravine.
I don't think that would do anything.
What if you can somehow lure it into a metal box?
Like a bank safe.
An elevator shaft. A vault. Bank safe. So, I think a bank safe would probably be the best way. Lock it in.
Well, then you run into the problem of how do you persuade the rest of humanity to leave that
abandoned bank. Abandoned bank.
I don't know. I think sooner or later someone would come along and
in
open
Detroit.
That safe. Yeah.
Abandoned bank in Detroit.
Sooner or later. I mean, you might be dead of old age by the time it happened, but
exactly.
Sooner or later. I mean, can you imagine living like that, though? You'd have to come and visit that place every single week to just give yourself peace of mind.
Make sure no one's tampered with it.
Yeah, you'd have to have stuff on there.
Could you freeze it in a block of ice?
Nah, I don't think
Bring it to Antarctica? You know, kind of like the thing?
I don't think that it's restricted to physical laws. I mean, if it can stand, you know. I mean, it was up on the girl's roof, and it didn't walk up.
Well, you can climb onto a roof.
Yeah, but it the
Maybe
point
there's
is,
a ladder out back.
Nah, but the point is it didn't walk up there. It isn't.
Maybe it climbed the tree.
Maybe.
But I really do think your best chances of outliving it is to trap it somewhere.
Maybe.
Or, like I said when we were watching the movie, if you're a girl, go to an airport. Find some guy going to Japan.
Yeah.
Find some guy going to Japan, screw his brains out right before his flight.
You know, what would make a really interesting twist to a movie like that is you do that. You actually get to know this guy. He's going traveling abroad, right?
Uh-huh.
And you think this is the way that he travels for a living. And so, you know, you get busy with him the night before he takes off, and then he takes off and you think, okay, I'm set now. But then later in the movie, you know, once you think you're safe, suddenly he comes back to the States to visit you for a surprise visit. And you're like, what are you doing here? What are you talking about? Aren't you glad to see me? And then it appears behind him.
Or you plan a vacation. Okay, you've screwed the guy going to Japan. He goes to Japan. You go on with your life. Years later, you both end up in a vacation in Paris.
Just happenstance.
You just happen to be there.
That's a little too. And then
you're talking, and then you hear the guy in the table next to you talking about how he just got off of flight 182.
Oh, Jesus.
And then you have a crossover.
Final Destination.
And then you have a crossover with Final Destination. What was your solution to outliving it?
I didn't have one. I don't think I could. I don't think I could, honestly. I think eventually it would wear me down and I would either, you know, end my own life or just allow it to catch up with me.
I would get tired. Welcome death as an old friend.
Yes,
kinda
I would just
like
say,
in Harry Potter.
I'd just say, okay, kill me, but please don't do what you did to that one dude from across the street. That's just wrong.
Yeah, don't have my mom fuck me to death, please.
That was awful.
That was wrong, man. A lot of levels. So, It Follows. What else can we say about It Follows without completely running through the story?
I love the score. You weren't impressed with the score, from what I understand, but I absolutely love it. I think it kind of hails back to a classic horror, you know, from the 80s with a lot of synth, and it's got that percussion, that theme of percussion whenever the thing is slowly coming after them. And it's got this this tap, 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 tap kind of sound to it. And I just love it. I think it adds to the nightmare vibe of the whole film.
Right.
I find it very enjoyable. The whole movie, you know, it isn't that complicated as far as plot goes. You know, there aren't like 30 scenes or anything. You know, it's very simple plot. But the vibe of the movie is wonderful. And I think this would be a great film to watch with somebody who has not seen it yet, so you can thrill vicariously. It is definitely not your usual Something's After Us movie.
Something After Us. Everyone can see it, but no one's doing anything about it. No, you can't see it unless it's after you.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I think is a very nice twist, actually. It gives, you know, how many movies have we seen? It's like, no, you don't understand. This guy's after me and he's gonna kill me. Yeah, whatever, kid. And they don't believe you, but they don't believe you for no damn good reason. Mm-hmm. You know? But this one, they have a reason to not believe you. They don't see it. Next week, The Monster Club takes a look at the 1994 horror, thriller, insane comedy. Dom DeLuise stars in Silence of the Lambs.